It says my last playthrough of FF7 was 38.7 hours.
That's fair.
And you could have used, like, that remaining, like, 1 point some hours to get Yuffie.
I could have, but I won't.
Do you get Vincent, though? I assume you get Vincent.
I did get Vincent. And also, yeah, so I used a rather controversial retranslation mod at the time. And as my first attempt at playing the game, I didn't realize that it completely replaced a character with Judas Iscariot.
Wait, I just thought it was dialogue?
No, as in like a model and dialogue and plot.
Wait,
and
what? What?
So I didn't know that Cat She was actually a character in that game. I thought they were a Dirge of Cerberus original for years.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Why?
Well, I didn't know. Okay, I get the joke. It was my first playthrough.
No. I'm saying I get the joke now that I thought about it for a second. I'm like, that's why they did that to that mod. Okay. Also, happy Easter, everyone.
You are listening to Boku no Stop, an anime podcast that is Spartacus. I'm your host, Sybil Arnett, and with me is...
Matt Marcus.
And I'm Garrett.
Chris is absent today, returning to the ways of his people and killing Jesus for Easter. But today we'll be talking about Iron-Blooded Orphans, episodes 15 and 16. Content warnings for today's batch include torture and massive amounts of gun violence. Last time... Operation Return a Brother was a failure, and a mass of the Tekadan crew is grappling with all sorts of emotions in the wake of an abnormally high amount of murders. I need to tell you, one of my co-hosts recoiled like they were slapped when I read off that first line. For all his trouble, Akihiro did not come home with his missing brother, but he did get to claim a whole Gundam out of the process. Meanwhile, Mika's whole deal is confusing everyone on the ship not named Orga. Biscuit and Atra have gone to hang out with Biscuit's cool older brother Whole Cake, most of the crew has walked right into a trap set by Noblesse Gordon, and Kudelia is barely evading the noose with Fumitan's life possibly on the line for letting her slip it.
You know what, Sybil, I was very confused by that line you said about Chris, and I had to think about it. I'm like, oh yes, the Italians.
Yeah, exactly.
the Romans. I'm like, wait a second, usually people would say that about... Okay, anyway, episode 15, Trail of Footprints. Our cold open is simply a wild-haired man in a mask wandering around one of the dork colonies saying, I had no idea this could be so much fun, more than I expected. I wonder who this is.
His outfit in this
disguise. Char with a bad haircut.
Okay.
Very bad haircut.
But Char... is a very grounded design. He has the shades that he needs for light sensitivity, which he makes part of the mask, and he's got the helmet. This is a full down-the-back anime cosplayer wig and a mask that can cover its eye slots with a button.
For no reason that we know
for
of.
For no reason.
Can he see through that?
Presumably?
I don't know, because he opens it up to look.
He just really likes Cyclops from X-Men and was like, I want a cool visor.
Ah, and it's X-Men, like, it's got like the, AC 253 has begun.
It's got a big old beak on it, too.
It's so extra. It's gilded. The mask is gilded.
Real talk. It has to be a real wig, right? Like, in the show, it has to be canonically a wig, right?
It's absolutely a wig. That's what I mean. It is a full anime cosplayer. It's spiked out to the gills going down his whole back.
You can't say gills. I'd be giving it away.
Yeah, I like how the show is asking us to pretend we don't know, like it didn't just do an entire skit about this last time for the preview.
Look, if I wasn't doing this show, I probably would be like, huh, that guy looks a little similar, but his hair's too long. I wonder what's up with that. Does he have a brother? So we then resume on Noblesse's ass in the sauna again. This dude just loves like taking meetings in his sauna. It's very weird. And the scheming old man finds out piece by piece that his plans are not really staying on the tracks because Cordelia is on the wrong colony, and Tekadon's delivery didn't turn into the same level of bloodbath that they originally planned for. We hard cut from this to Mika asking Fumitan point blank, so what's on your mind? I usually can't read you, but clearly you're thinking about something. And there's a brief chat about responsibility, which is ambiguous enough that, you know, basically everyone is throwing around this word, but they are talking about different things or they're understanding it differently, including Cordelia, who thinks this is about, you know, having to get married because she got kissed once.
Yeah.
You know. But neither side sort of plays their hand out. And honestly, I feel like it's mostly Fumitan withholds and Mika just doesn't know what the fuck's going on because he just barely pays attention to anything. I don't know.
Everyone then switches topics, hoping Biscuit's revenues or rendezvous go smoothly so he doesn't have to go through what Akihiro did. Cordelia...
How bad do you think this can go, Atra?
First of all, the funny thing is they lay it out here. Here's the parallel. And guess what? More or less the same thing happens. More or less. Like, dude's still breathing, but...
For now. Cordelia comments that, speaking of brothers, Mika, you and Orga almost seem like a pair of them. Mika gets quiet for a sec and then just goes, Orga is, well, I don't know how to put it exactly.
Your boyfriend. He's your boyfriend. We've been over this.
Have we? I mean, I don't think we've gone over this.
Look, they just did a big Charmero drone show in Tokyo about a night before we did this. So gays can be in Gundam.
Look, it's a QPR. That's fine. You know what? We're allowed to have that in space.
SSR tiny kisses.
And this is how we segue into a labor revolt in the warehouse. Everyone is still standing in a tizzy trying to unload the containers and arm themselves since Galhorn's retreat is a limited reprieve. We are introduced to Navona Mingo. Is that it?
You got it.
Leader of the Dort 2 labor union.
We're like, Tekadon, Nirvana not going to get out of these episodes.
The Tekadon Quartet, Orga, Eugene, Shino, and Yamagi have already conferred to the side, realizing that until their scheduled contact hour, they've got no way to talk to Mika and warn him about the situation. So Orga and Nirvana meet... Or Navona meets, and Orga takes up the older man's offer to keep the youth hidden until their backup returns.
Elsewhere on Dort 3, Biscuit is looking solemn on a bench, and Atra has to ask him, do you even want to do this? You don't look like you want to do this. Mm-hmm. Biscuit is just worried that he can't live up to his brother's example. When he was my age now, Severin was already working and trying to put himself through college, whereas I'm not. Maybe I was never going to be his equal. I just don't want to disappoint. And this is where Atra slaps him on the back and goes, dude, you literally run operations for a military company. What the hell do you think that's nothing for? And before this can go any further, Severin shows up and it is a tearful reunion. But unfortunately, the older brother has a reaction when he sees Atra and excuses himself for a moment, saying he wants to find an area where all three of them could talk without interruption, since there's a woman involved. Atra is reassuring her friend, but Biscuit immediately pegs something's up with this, and in a phone booth, Severin plugs in his company line and says he needs a car with 5 men. We'll be saved the trouble now.
I called it, but... It was pretty obvious.
You know, he was probably going to be fine if he didn't see Atra, because that's what makes him escalate.
That is true. I'll probably talk more about this in my summation of the episodes, sure. My feelings on this whole bit. We then head back to Dort 2. The slums we've heard mentioned finally get to appear on screen. And yeah, it has big projects in the U.S. vibes. Also kind of reminds me of like, what was it? The sections of Children of Men was kind of like that, where they were in like the penned off area. Yeah. Whole probably big sections of Eastern Europe, later last century and probably still now.
Yeah. Large chunks of the world have districts like this where you mm-hmm. made a bunch of housing en masse that's uniform and made out of concrete because it's just meant to provide a purpose rather than look pretty.
Yep. And all the laborers live in spaces like this, and they comment that nobody ever gets out of them except Saverin. He was one of the lucky ones who got sort of ordained to leave.
If you want more information on this, listeners, go find the Kendrick Lamar song Black Boy Fly.
I have not heard that one, actually.
It is a semi-autobiographical track talking about how when you come up in a bad neighborhood, every mm-hmm. time someone who isn't you gets a scholarship, gets out, you mm-hmm. immediately look at it as, well, he's the one of us. Oh, fuck.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of that album is about sort of that journey anyway. They didn't mention that on a Dissect, so I haven't listened to it yet.
Yeah, it's an interesting one.
And one of the guys says, like, I'm sure he has his reasons. And then we crossfade from that to Atra's shouting, "No, let me go." And a goon squad shows up and kidnaps Atra and Biscuit. They think Atra is Cordelia, and Saverin is still hanging around. You don't have to hand it to him for sticking
around.
I'll
hand it to him. He's an upper management mook who, despite this, is getting involved in this and not hiding out of the room or assigning it to someone else. Well,
probably because one of the people there, kidnapping is his brother.
Sure, but also this is the kind of thing where if you had a more hateable character, you'd just be going, "You take care of this. I have things to do."
Yeah, he's not portrayed as like fully selling out where he's come from here. He just is a desperate dipshit.
Yes,
really. He just has bad opinions.
He's making very bad compromises that he thinks are the best compromises.
Yes.
But also, who really isn't a coward is Atra, who, when she realizes the identity mix-up that's happening here, she decides to say, "Yep, I am Cordelia." And Biscuit's like, "What the fuck are you doing?" And she just like shuts him up and just, they take her into another room and, Yeah. The other thing is like, she does say like, she puts her faith in, Mika, Cordelia and Fubutan to kind of figure out what's going on and save them. They are carted off by, are these Gjallarhorn soldiers?
They are Gjallarhorn soldiers. Okay. The guys in the green uniforms and masks. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like there are three parties in this scenario, and I'm not, or maybe there's just more Gjallarhorn levels within Gjallarhorn that are kind of vying for.
So Ariane Rod, we will bring up in a little, and they are active, but I don't know if we currently know what the distinction is visually for them. So
yeah, because it feels like the guys that Saverin are running with are like part of the company, but not part of Gjallarhorn, if that makes sense.
Well, those are Gjallarhorn guys. They're actually kind of flexing that on the company men later.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, it's I don't know. I find it a little messy because you think if Gjallarhorn immediately thought they had Cordelia in hand, like that would have gone immediately up to the brass being like, "Hey, we got her."
Yeah, and when we go happened. Between episodes, I'll just put out all of the men who are in play right now and say how this is such a mess.
Yeah, yeah. It is definitely messy.
For sure. I'm the hammerhead. Laughter enters the bridge going, the Isaribi is coming to meet us. What's going on with that? And Naze gives a quick overview on how Tekadon is eating shit on someone else's deal. Central control from Earth doesn't seem to work too well the further you get from them, and while all of the Earthborn executives are quite content, the laborers who catch hell whenever profit dips are growing louder and louder in their disapproval. Once people began showing up in the streets over this, the endpoint was inevitability. And then either him or the other lady comments about how Laughter should apparently do her studying in current events.
And Laughter, of course, is like, yeah, that's not a robot, though.
It's true. Well, it's not a robot.
Is this the scene where she's like protesting for better treatment? And it goes to Naze and be like, treat me better. You haven't treated
me well enough. The entire bridge crew starts roasting him because, Laughter says something about speaking about management shirking their responsibilities, and every woman on the bridge starts yelling at him because he tries to use, does Orga work as cover for why I've been around less?
It might work better if you don't ask it as a question.
Look, they just need to get to the negotiating table and get a contract about when they're going to get laid pipe. Just put it on a schedule.
That's true.
Isn't that how poly relationships work? You have a schedule. You have a spreadsheet.
If you're lucky, it's graphs. Nodes.
Well, see, you just have to find the partner who's really into organization.
There's always one. Back in the slums, Orga and Navona have a quick chat as the two men make final plans to get the team out to Dort 3. Orga asks pretty honestly, are guns the only way here? And Navona says, I get it, I'd rather not.
My skills are at the negotiating table, but if the company refuses to show up, well, let's just say I'm holding back some men who would prefer we try more drastic measures.
As Navona sums up the position of the Union, we see more shots outside of the building, where we have some gruffer-looking men gathered, and the graffiti around ranges from things like better working conditions to we demand CEO hearts, putting a pretty clear button on the two sides of the Union right now.
Mm-hmm.
Navona finishes and he asks Orga, hey, look, I know this is awkward, but we're a bunch of warehouse guys and, like, you have experience here. Could we get your help on this as Tekadon?
And Orga thinks for a second, but politely refuses, saying, your cause is just, but all our involvement would do right now is to make trouble for someone we owe a lot to. And Navona understands, and it's at this point that a laborer runs in with a tablet and some snapshots from a union mole on Dort 3 who's seen Biscuit in his Tekadon jacket and quote-unquote Kudelia being shoved into a black car in an alleyway. And Orga's like, the fuck? That's our cook. before their terminal rings with the scheduled call from Mika. And the Tekadon, Orga is fuming, wondering what's going on. But Mika is completely in the dark on this, of course, because he had no idea there was even a situation happening.
Mika's was just like, what? This is just our call we had scheduled.
You wanted to hear from me at 3, man.
And it's like, you feel like you should open this call, Orga should open this call up and be like, hey, Mika, is that you? By the way, there's an armed uprising we've been set up. This should have been the first sentence out of Orga's fucking mouth. But anyway, we come back from commercial. We skip over all of that actual exposition that happens. And Mika decides to suit up and heads into the city, asking Fumitan to watch over Kudelia. And to say, hey, both of you lay low in the hotel. I'm going to go figure this out. Fumitan nods, simply saying that protecting the young mistress is her responsibility. Take a shot, I guess.
Meanwhile, in space, hey, remember Galio and Ion? They've arrived at Dort. Egalio is summoned by the captain to probably be briefed on the Dort situation, but Ein is told he's going to get the borrow of the big boy mech today. Galio's custom was that swad German word Greys?
Schwabel Greys.
This doesn't concern the young noble, though. He's going to get the feel of the Gundam, Camaris. The briefing isn't to Galio's liking, however. The fact that there's an armed uprising in progress means that Gjallarhorn's command is going, hey, how about you don't let a seven-star ship dock and stir up more feelings? And thus, Galio's battleship has to just hover outside of range. Galio tells his boss to go fuck himself, politely, and as soon as he storms off, the captain gives the order to everybody to absolutely not let Galio launch his goddamn Gundam from the flight deck, bemoaning that he's stuck in this crap on his daughter's birthday.
I feel so sorry for that captain. He's a shitbag, he's a company man, but also he's just like, oh, fucking rich boy.
It's so funny that they, like, last episode, they set up this whole, all right, we're just going to go on a little training mission, and then we're going to swoop in and be part of this plot. And then this happens, and they go, you're not a part of this plot.
You will make all of this plot so much worse.
But, I'm sorry, I mean, I'm just surprised they can't go kill these children.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, this kind of reminds me of when... I mean, this is a more extreme version, but in G-Witch, where there's the character locker that a bunch of them get shoved into for most of season two. It's like, come on. Are you going to do something with these people or not? And then they do something with it and it's bad.
One day I'll finally watch G-Witch.
It's good. You should watch it.
Yeah,
we'll have to... Infinite Space with Max.
We'll have to talk about the school shooter arc with you.
We already covered it on a bonus episode, if you hadn't seen that, by the way. The show, not the... We talk about the school shooting. We have to, because it's a fucking thing that happens.
Season 2, Columbine Pride, baby. You don't see Jesus the flags Christ. For that with the Witch from Mercury.
Bro, you have... every time I see fucking fan art of you-know-who, I'm like, yo, fucking, I get it, but like, no!
Look, some people like their yanderes.
That's not what the... Oh, Jesus Christ. One of them is kind of a yandere.
Yes, absolutely.
And then the other one's just sad and it's depressing.
Senpai! In space...
I have no clue what's going on. That don't might worry be about better it. Better right
don't
now.
Worry about it. What,
yeah, everyone right watch now G-Witch. Great. In space, the Tekadan Quartet is a bit pissed they can't make it into Dort 3 because of the security lockdown. And finally, Orga just comes up with a plan. Eugene, dock anywhere, he says, busting out 4 normal suits. Meanwhile, Mika's returned to the scene of the abduction, finding nothing but Atra's boot, which he sniffs to confirm that it's her. It's a weird
Why?
Move.
Why? I mean, okay, at least he sniffs the outside of the boot.
He does,
and not
yeah,
the
he does
inside
sniff
of the boot.
The leg,
let's be clear.
Not the hole, but. He is approached by a man in the shadows who pegs him from the unicorn as Tekadan. Elsewhere, Atra's being tortured.
Dude. You know what? It's funny. I listened to the last week's episode before recording today, and there was definitely a point where I say, man, something bad's going to happen to Atra, huh? She's only here hanging around, so something bad happens to her. And yep. Boy, this is hard to watch.
She plays hardball, telling the goon she's not going to speak to anyone this low on the totem pole. But they use her small size to really go to town on her, hurling her across the room with blows, knocking her into a wall, yeah. Knocking her off a chair.
She's like a third of their size. She looks like an 8-year-old.
Yeah. In a closet to the side, Biscuit and Saverin are talking? Saverin's going, look, man, give me anything she might have told you, and I can try and negotiate us out of this. And Biscuit's just going, so your kid sister's turned 9, by the way. Glad you asked about Cookie and Cracker. Mm-hmm. The two argue this out until Saverin finally goes, look, I believe you. I get that this is a setup. I get that you are not a terrorist. but that doesn't mean shit if Gjallarhorn just gets what they want and crushes the unions with a public justification. If they take this Maiden of Revolution and One Life Saves Thousands, and Biscuit finally screams, "That's not Koudelia, you idiot!"
And it's very clear on Saverin's face that he immediately believes Biscuit. But what he says next, you know, really shines a light on this dude's mental state. Because he starts tearing up and starts saying, no, that's definitely Koudelia in the next room. Because we don't have time for any other options. He's just so fucking desperate to get this deal done. And he thinks that this will save whatever negotiations they have. And it's really fucking sad. I mean, it's a nice little beat in terms of just seeing like how desperate this dude is.
Yeah, I don't mention it much in the notes because it's just sort of a slow runner in every conversation. But Navona is constantly going, look, we're going to get a call from Saverin at any point because he's their negotiator from the company with the union. And Saverin would like to go back to the table, but his bosses are telling him, no, there's a process in play.
Yeah, this kind of, you know who this reminds me of? And I just thought of this. The dude in Fargo, what's the actor's name? The guy who gets his wife kidnapped. The main guy, fucking, ugh. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Yeah. Like, extremely, like, sweaty, desperate, trying to make this thing, like, pull through the right way vibes. Very effective. In a hotel room across the colony, Fumitan is having a long, dark moment of the soul in a bathroom before she hears someone open the front door to the room. She rushes into the hall to stop Koudelia from sneaking off. As the young blonde tries to plead that Fumitan has to let her go because she can't let Atra go through all of this for her sake. Fumitan stops just short of slapping Koudelia, telling her, listen to me, get back inside right now because with how things currently stand, you might actually get her killed if you turn yourself in and they find out they've been torturing an innocent girl. Because it's one fewer witness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you clean up the mistake.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Koudelia says one thing that wounds her caretaker to the core. If I allow Atra to die to save my own skin, then I've become my father. Atra told me she considered me part of the Tekadan family, and I have no intention of betraying any of you. Not her, not this crew, and not you, Fumitan.
Fumitan reacts as if she's been slapped, and then starts hissing out her next response. You haven't changed after all these years. Those bright, honest eyes. I hated them. Always have. You could have hope because you didn't know any better. Oh, how I wished reality would slap you in the face and cloud those eyes once and for all. Koudelia has not quite realized what's happening, and is just going, wait, Fumitan, what? As the older woman continues, before I knew it, I was the one with those feelings had changed. And that's why I've learned that every action comes with a reaction, a responsibility. Fumitan grasps her charger's arm and shuffles the girl behind her as the masked man from the intro walks up. He just lays it out plainly. Look, you should get off door 3 immediately. A lot of people consider you their hope, their maiden of revolution, and I can't let you die here, even if your patron has decided that's what goes down. Also, don't trust Fumitan. Koudelia starts denying this, but Fumitan just owns it, saying, yep, nope, he's got me dead to rights, bye, and then runs off.
And then Koudelia's like, no, this can't be true. It's like, I get it, you've been spent your whole life with this woman practically, but also...
Yeah, it's really funny because everyone in the room is like, oh no, yeah, I'm absolutely working for Noblesse Gordon. She's like, okay, but you have to tell me that. You can't just let the masked man say it.
Also, who the fuck is this guy? Why should we trust him? What's going on?
He doesn't even give his alias this episode. It's so funny. We still don't know who this is.
We have no idea who this is. I mean, okay, we know who this is, but we don't know who this is.
Yeah.
He's a guy playing a guy dressed... Anyway.
The masked man urges Koudelia to stay alive, but he does not capture her and lets her run off after her departing maid. Across town, at this point, Biscuit and Atra are in the same cell now, basically locked in a closet in this abandoned building, with Atra saying, you know, she's had worse beatings than this, she's fine. She asks Biscuit if he got to tell his brother what he wanted to, and before he can speak up, the building is rocked by an explosion. Mikazuki has set a truck to ram the front entrance and begun murdering his way into this place.
Yeah, Mika's a badass.
It's real good, because they just start hearing gunshots, and then finally, the door opens and his pistol peers around the corner before Biscuit's like, no, we're good!
Oh yeah, they did the first-person shooter shot, too.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
He must have definitely capped those dudes, like, around the corner, right? Like, you see some bodies on the floor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mika definitely has a body count this episode. Second most in this recording.
I mean, he has the highest body count in the show until later next episode. Yeah. that's a whole different scenario.
So, the rest of the episode is a blur of escalating chaos. Mikazuki, Biscuit, and Atra escape the hotel, where Mika has to admit, yeah, I kind of didn't think ahead to this part, and they luck out and run into Orga and the crew in a hijacked truck. Incidentally, it is actually the corn from the first ending. There's that corn logo on the truck. It's very fun.
Oh, I didn't notice that. That's great. That's
yeah, it's the little rainbow maze that it just says corn.
Corn. Well, it also would be very funny if, you know, because they were growing corn in, like, you know, on the farm and stuff.
Yeah.
So, like,
this might,
like,
actually be
tie-in.
A truck that was from deliveries of the Biscuit Farm.
Yeah.
Savarin pursues them, but he's unable to convince his brother to hand over Kudelia, and Savarin realizes in despair that everything is about to go to hell as Gjallarhorn soldiers start firing at his brother's retreating ride. In the streets of Dort III, Navona and his men begin a slow procession up the main street towards corporate offices, weapons in tow, with their little tanks following behind. And elsewhere on the colony, Kudelia is running blind through the streets, trying to find Fumitan, with no leads and unaware of just how badly things are about to pop off.
But we just blew through it, but, like, Atra no-selling the beating she took? Oof.
I mean, she does say, before she worked for that nice shopkeeper, she was a literal whipping girl for a hostel.
I know, that... I mean, that's also a wild thing that they put in this show.
Oh, yeah.
God.
So before we go into it, I did just say, hey, let's talk about all the factors in play here.
Yeah.
So we have Gjallarhorn and three branches thereof, because we have Gjallarhorn, the organization, which would like to put down the labor unions and keep their control. We have Gjallarhorn's special forces, Arianrod, and they are the ones who presumably have got the suits into the square and are the ones running this op.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have Galio and his ship, where he's trying to do personal vendetta shit, and everyone above him in the rankings is going, you are not going to fuck this up.
Mm-hmm.
Come back to that later.
Mm-hmm.
We have got the Dort Corporation, which runs these colonies and which is perfectly happy to go along and put down labor because that keeps profits going and gives them a scapegoat in case they're about to have a bad quarter. Well, you heard that massacre. We had to replace everyone. It's terrible, terrible news. Sorry, stockholders.
Mm-hmm.
We have Tekadon, who have been used as pawns by Noblis Gordon. We have Noblis Gordon, who wants to kick off a conflict here. He wants bloodshed. He wants there to be a war. He might be the person behind things that happen at the end of episode 16 when things escalate further. Unsure yet.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Masked Man, who is trying to keep Kudelia alive for reasons. We don't know his plan yet. And we also have the Tewaz organization, where McMurdo Barristan is going, what's the business angle on all of this?
That's too many.
Did I miss anyone?
I think that covered pretty much everything. The thing that I'm not sure of is how much is Noblesse Gordon tied to Gjallarhorn directly? Like, are they communicating? I mean, clearly he's using them for a purpose too. And it seems like he delivered on something that Gjallarhorn wanted already, which is an uprising to put down, right? Like, it feels like they're kind of in cahoots somewhat. I don't really know where he sits relative to Gjallarhorn, because I guess he runs a company. We know that.
Yes.
And he's got a certainly noble-ass name, but that's all we know about him.
Well, here's some things you can definitely intuit from his position based on what you've learned about Earth. Yep. He's not in Gjallarhorn.
Mm-hmm.
He's not in a 7-star family, so that means he doesn't have that kind of nobility to his name.
Right.
So, at most, especially based on the way that McMurdo can just call him instantly, we know he's definitely, let's say, maybe a crime lord, maybe just a very well-connected businessman. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's interesting that he arranged for a revolution, you know, to kick off at the same time that Gjallarhorn's like, fuck yeah, let's fuck these guys up. We're just waiting for any excuse. So I assume there's some kind of collusion happening there.
It could be, but also you've got the masked man who's like, everyone wants a war. This is common knowledge. A lot of people realize mm-hmm. that the underclass is eating shit.
Yeah.
Everyone just seems to want different things out of the eventual flashpoint.
Yeah. The thing that where it gets like all of that makes a sense, and it's not like too bad, except obviously there's a lot of Gjallarhorn subparties in there. And then what happens at the end of this next episode is where things go, okay, now what's going to actually happen? Because now I'm confused about what's the next step for.
And that's exactly what you should be feeling, because we leave on a lot of ambiguity from what seemed like a very clear issue.
Right. Anyway, that takes us to episode 16, Fubitan Admos. Nothing bad is going to happen to her. So we open on a flashback to presume, you know that someone's going to fucking die in an anime when it's a flashback scene. I mean, it happens. This happens all the time. Of like,
Atra has had multiple flashbacks now. All of the Tekadon kids who have names have had flashbacks now.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, they didn't have flashbacks with their name in the fucking title of the show.
Okay, but the episode. Only two people get a name in the title of the show this season. There's Fumitan Admos, and there's an episode called Brother. And that's it.
Anyway, death flags everywhere. So we open on a flashback to presumably one of the first meetings between young Cordelia and Fumitan. And the girl clearly heard something of the world from this new maid and wants to know more about it. And she wants to learn everything specifically about Mars. And Fumitan just goes, sure, but we can't tell your mom about this. And a naive Cordelia does not realize, why this needs to be kept secret, but she's like, sure, yeah, no, I want to do this. She then proceeds to show the maid one of her prized possessions, which is a physical paper book called The History of Revolutions. And they mention that, like, oh, yeah, this they don't make paper books anymore. This is an extremely rare thing, which I'm gonna go against Chris's thing in the last episode. I always like it when physical books are like, this is a rarity, we don't make paper anymore. And Sybil holds up the enormous leather-bound
fucking JRPG saga. Tome.
Yeah. Hey, did you know they're making really good hardcovers of Vinland Saga, which are bound in leather? It's great. Well worth your time.
All I'm going to say is that if there is a webcomic that you like and it's getting a physical release, buy that shit, especially if it's going to be on like a Tapas or a Webtoon, because that shit could just disappear one day and you can't read it ever again, unless you're on a pirate site.
Yep.
So buy physical shit. I just bought a copy of Among Us, which is it's a nice little cute side story.
Yeah, but I've got that on my phone.
No, but you could have it in your hand.
Yeah, in my hand, on my phone.
On paper.
You can have it
Among Us is on everything. Paper.
Is it on Minidisc?
No. Not among us. Amongst us. Did I?
Okay, got it. Correctly? You said among us.
Amongst us. No.
I also heard indeed. Among us.
Sorry, I was like, don't say the wrong one. I said the wrong one. No, Amongst Us, the webcomic.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah, I will post it in chat. Anyway, yeah, so they're looking at this book, The History of Revolutions, which is, I mean, pretty on the nose, but sure, let's go with it. Yeah, she opens it up and sees a painting of like a revolution with Joan of Arc, and she's with a sword out, and she's holding a small child to her chest. This is important.
For what it's worth, when you think about the course that a book would have had to take to get to Mars after the Calamity War and from Earth and from all of this civilization, you understand why this would be such a prized relic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. But it's very funny that, like, a noble family has a book about revolutions, specifically. I mean, maybe they have a lot of books, and this is just the one that she's interested in. I'm probably willing to believe they have a handful. It's interesting. But it's also, I saw that, and I went like, huh, like the thing we're talking about this entire episode.
Look, Mario Kata wrote this. You know what you're getting in for.
I know. Incest, usually. It's not always true. It's often true, but it's not always true.
The only living siblings in the show right now are too young for me to make jokes.
That's true.
Well, look, Biscuit and Saffron are still alive.
There are Biscuit and Saffron. That's true. I guess what I'm saying is the Griffin family is where all of the worst jokes are going to go right now.
Yeah, it's true.
Oof.
Well, we'll see how that crumbles, is all I'll say. Oh, come on. I'm not the first person to make that joke on this podcast.
In the streets of Mars, in the past, and Dort 3 in the present, Cadelia runs through screaming for her maid. In the present, we can see Fumitan actively hiding from the girl down an alleyway, telling her, "I always hated those honest eyes," as she grasps the pendant once more. We cut back to the hotel. The Tekkaden crew find out that Fumitan and Cadelia were both seen leaving the hotel separately, but didn't check out. Mika runs off, saying he's going to find the duo, and Atra follows, with Orga urging her to keep him safe.
Look, my bro is kind of an idiot, so please stop him from, like, punching a cop right now.
In the streets, we get some internal monologue from Cudelia. She's heard about finding out that Fumitan was some kind of pawn for Noblis, but mostly she's upset that this had to be told to her by the masked man, thinking, "I just want to hear why from you in your own words." At this point, the Union procession is becoming louder and more visible. The crowd is swelling, and megaphones are carrying out chants into the crowd as they slowly march up the streets. Navona is insistent. Whatever happens, their side cannot fire first. Make Gjallarhorn the villains.
From Gilio's battleship, we can see that this has become galactic news. The protest being broadcast live on a channel they can see on their main screen. The captain tells Gilio, this is only going to get louder. The Arian Rod fleet should have this calculated in as a part of their planned actions. And this is where we first learn about this group, which is a Gjallarhorn Special Forces unit. And Galio dismisses them, but we see custom suits moving in to the moving in towards the colonies in the darkness of space.
Fumitan is taking an elevator towards the colony spaceport, and as she does, we see another flashback. The Martian slum we saw Cadelia in earlier was a quote-unquote field trip she requested from the maid, wanting to see what life was like away from the manor.
This entire time, Fumitan is just like, "We need to go back. Your mother is going to kill me. Your father is going to kill me."
It seems like a really dumb idea for her to do this. It's like, give them a reason to, like, you know, get you arrested or whatever for kidnapping.
Yeah.
Right. Fumitan tells the young woman, Look, do not mistake giving one kid some food as, yeah, bettering the conditions of every Martian. But Cadelia pushes back with, yeah, you're right, but also, if I can only do one and not the other right now, why would I not do the lesser act? This gets a little out of hand as more street urchins come looking out for a suite, and the confusion of the moment and an old man also going, hey, I can use some, causes Cadelia to lose sight of her maid and begin running through the streets. What we find out from this extended flashback was Fumitan was hiding back then just as she is now and hoping someone would solve this problem for her.
And then she is jostled out of her reverie by the elevator locking down with security announcement. Due to continued protests and Gjallarhorn decree, the spaceport is being closed temporarily. This elevator will cease operations and return to ground level for your safety. On the Hammerhead, Maribit and the Isaribi have made contact now, but the administrator is a bit upset they can't just go swing by and retrieve the rest of the crew. Dort 3 has been fully locked down. Ariane Rod is openly moving into position around the colony with a full fleet, and meanwhile, Gjallarhorn is all silence on what's going on. Only the news feed from inside Dort 3 is a window into the protests. Did you ever think you were going to be saying Dort so much during these episodes? It's such a funny word.
It is. But also, like, so many of the names of anything, like, Gjallarhorn-based are, I don't know,
well,
Icelandic
Dort isn't even
something.
Gjallarhorn. Dort is a corporation.
Fair enough. Yeah, but there's a lot of, like, language borrowing that's happening here.
In the hangars of both the Hammerhead and Isaribi, all mobile suits are being prepared for launch with or without a pilot. We see Akihiro trying sync tests with his new Gundam around here, with a familiar massive nosebleed as a result.
So, we see more of the search for Cadelia in the colony. There's a good line of Shino asking, where are all these people going with that dangerous stuff? talking about the procession. And Yamagi's reply of, probably to somebody in power. Good guess. Good guess. Yeah. sounds about right.
So, yeah.
It's like, they're not going to go to the fucking store and ask for bread. Or maybe they will. Depends on how hungry they are.
You usually do that before the guns aiming at the Capitol.
That's true. And as the elevator lands, two particularly large men are waiting outside for Fumitan, and they're in suits, and they're clearly security of some sort. And they are like, hey, where's the target? Why aren't you with the target? And they rough her up a little bit, like pushing her up against a wall, and says that everyone else in the crew is ready to do their part and that she needs to do hers. And then they walk away. Sure.
Well, I mean, if you beat her up, she can't find the girl.
No, sure. But also, they can't just be like, hey, we'll just, like, you didn't hold up your end of the bargain. We're just going to take care of it if we find her first. Like, they don't say that. They say, okay, no, you go do your job. We're still just going to step back and do this our way. Across Dort 3, everyone's watching the slow-moving sides gain on each other. Gjallarhorn finally makes an appearance, sending out three mobile suits and some troops as perimeter guard on the company headquarters. On Galio's ship, the captain comments that this is exactly what Gjallarhorn needs. Trained soldiers can keep calmer for longer, and with the news vans running nonstop, all it takes is one laborer's itchy trigger finger to justify whatever comes next.
In the truck, Navona is worried about the same thing, hoping Saverin comes through. Inside HQ, Saverin is getting rebuffed just as hard as the young man tries to sue for peace. His bossing's telling him, no, violence is good for us, actually. Some of the bosses are getting really nervous with the conflict directly outside the building, but a Gjallarhorn soldier inside says, look, you're technically the one in charge here, which is a chilling line from the guy with the gun.
This is the point I was calling out earlier, where clearly the company has made a deal or is willing to look the other way on this, but Gjallarhorn is also definitely going, hey, we're just here as security. You're calling the shots. They know this is as much PR as anything, yep. And if it goes incredibly wrong, what did the Dort Corporation do?
Mm-hmm.
On the outskirts of the march, Fumitan is just trudging along, fist curled up, asking herself what the hell she is even doing before From the other side of the crowd, a familiar voice cries out her name, and just as innocently as ever, Cadelia begins waving and smiling at the sight of the older woman.
This is probably the one time that I agree with Fumitan. It's like, those fucking innocent eyes. No! Mm-hmm. No! She ran off in the middle of a crisis and dragged you into this. Maybe you should be a little more upset.
Just a little bit.
It only takes a few moments before someone in the union recognizes Cudelia, and she is swept into the middle of the march and then towards the front with Navona. She's clearly uncomfortable with this, having just wanted to meet up with Fumitan, but the news and the crowds alike are picking up on the change in energy. Everyone's getting louder, there's a bit of a commotion. From a nearby building, the goons that hassled Fumitan before just look on in astonishment, going, oh shit, she came through. Guess she is a team player. Running through the streets, Mika stops suddenly, telling Atra, found her. Cudelia is front and center on all the broadcasts now. Atra immediately understands what is about to happen and says, I'll go find my way back to the others and let them know we found her. And she says she'll be okay. Mika shows a moment of tenderness that doesn't really match expectations for him, and he puts a hand on her cheek and goes, will you be okay? And she says, yes, she will. Now go bring Cudelia home.
Okay. So the Saverin and the Gjallarhorn men don't know what Cudelia looks like. But all the workers know exactly what Cudelia looks like.
So this is probably one of the things that is most called out in this first season.
Oh, yeah.
Is this bit in the Dort arc where Cudelia is famous for speeches, has been on television, has been a public agitator.
Yep.
And yet there is this large amount of convenient blindness about who she is and what she looks like regularly. It is probably the single dumbest part of this plot that has to make everything work.
And it really doesn't add much other than some drama and getting to beat up Atra, I guess. It seems like it's not gaining a lot from that one moment of mix-up, other than, like, having Severin have his little meltdown. Or, like,
I feel
kicking
like
off his meltdown.
The big issue is this. If it was just Severin making a mistake, and some Gjallarhorn grunts don't know, okay, that makes some sense. When you get to the point of the newsman going, who the hell is that? I don't know, but the crowd loves her. Then it starts to... That's about where I
know.
Also
they
agree.
Should.
This is dumb.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little funky.
It works in an isolated bubble, but yes, once we get to... half the room recognizes her, half the room doesn't, and there's a hit on her. Then everything kind of falls apart if you think about it for 30 seconds.
Yeah. And it's also funny that her reputation has changed significantly, at least on word of mouth, that she is fomenting revolution instead of just, you know, doing the speeches, we need to give these people more rights thing and not actually doing any direct action.
That's the thing. If you've only heard her on the radio and then suddenly some guy starts going around going, hey, delivery from Cudelia for ya. She's going to get us ready. Remember, somebody's been going around talking shit and planning this.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's... and it's also frustrating to watch her like get like swept up in it. And it's just like, oh, God, you knew that was going to happen.
Cudelia is... sometimes a painfully naive character.
That's the point. I get it. So in the square, the leadership are trying to praise Cajole and entice Cudelia all at once, with Moore still asking for a speech to raise morale of the group because they're starting to hit a wall here. And she begins wondering just what the fuck is going on and why they are thanking her for guns. And before anyone could give her answers, the front of Dort HQ explodes. And on Kylio's ship, and the thing is, clearly, no one shot anything. And the explosion is in the build, like front of the building, but like not near any soldiers or anything. And the captain on, or sorry, is, does Gailio actually say this?
I thought it was Gailio. Gailio says this is a sloppy plan because he instantly pegs a false flag.
Yeah, yeah. And the captain says, sure, but it's a pretense and the information can be altered later. After all, we are Gjallarhorde. It's like, welp. Well, maybe I don't care about whether or not you go see your daughter on her birthday, do you?
Yep. If it wasn't for this line, you'd kind of feel this guy is just eating a shit sandwich, but it's like, oh, you're a dick.
Like you buy into the shit. So in front of the HQ, the three mobile suits fire around each into all the Union tanks, which destroys them all instantly. They don't fire back anyway, or at least at this point. And some of the Union workers do begin firing in self-defense, but a young woman rushes Cadelia out of the square to safety. Gjallarhorde troops launch what appear to be gas grenades in the crowd, but it soon becomes clear that it's nothing but a massive smokescreen. And one of the men issues the order that says, begin the sweep. And immediately, all three suits fix their machine guns at person height and just fire indiscriminately into the cloud.
Somehow, as the smoke clears, the woman did in fact keep Cadelia in the clear at the cost of her own life. In the middle of the streets, the only thing the camera crews can focus on that isn't corpses is the stunning blonde woman cradling a dying into dead laborer.
And they, you know, Fubitad does see this, and she explicitly calls out that Joan of Arc painting in the book, you know, saying like, oh, she was protecting hope.
The cameras aren't the only people to notice her, as two goons in a high-rise go, well, I'll be damned, amazed at her luck before taking aim with a particularly large rifle. One shot later, Cadelia collapses to the ground, covered in blood. Fumitan's blood, from taking the shot from her, the woman has gone limp, barely holding herself above the girl and telling Cadelia not to get up. They still might have sights on her.
Unknown to either woman, the two goons have just been told, look, fuck it, this is good enough for the boss. We have footage of Cadelia in the middle of the riot, and if we don't leave now, we will get caught in the security suite. So Fumitan pulls the pendant out of her pocket as she bleeds out onto her charge, telling her, I don't deserve this. And once again, she does the I hate those eyes of yours speech. And this time it ends with her final words. You've made it so far. You made it. Just like that book. Just like that girl. And she collapses and dies.
And Cordelia's like, what book?
For a second, yeah, she does. I think she does actually wonder out what book. As the news crew decides, no, this is enough for today, the entire colony begins shaking. Apparently, there are now terrorist bombings going off elsewhere in Dort 3, and on Dort 1, and Dort 4. Whatever has just started here is spreading fast.
Mikazuki arrives, finding only Cadelia alive in the street, still pinned under her maid's body. And Cadelia asks for help getting her to safety, but Mika tells her, like, quite plainly, like, that's not her anymore. We got to get the fuck out of here. And when the young woman refuses to get up, Mika throws Cadelia over his shoulder and begins running to get them to safety as she screams for Fumitan once more. In a smoky office, Nobles Gordon smashes out a cigar, complaining that you can never trust a woman. And his secretary buzzes him on the intercom, telling him McMurdo Barristan is calling. Unsure of why, Gordon says, put him through.
McMurdo is still a businessman, and his very first line is, you know, you better have a very good plan in mind if you plan to cut down a money tree like Cadelia. But what he proposes is a joint alliance, because McMurdo says, if that young woman gets away alive, you won't have a spark of rebellion in your hands. You're going to have a wildfire. And I didn't take those boys in for nothing. We do not hear Gordon's reply. In the streets, as Gjallarhorde troops clear the bodies away, Saverin can be seen crying over the corpse of Navona, sobbing that he let everyone down. Regrouped back at the hotel, the Tekadon youths and Cudelia are trying to figure out how they're going to get out of this alive. The streets are swarming with Galahorn patrols. Still in shock, Cudelia stares at her bloodied hands and the pendant she held onto where it fell on her. She mutters that she remembers that book as well. We cut back one final time to the young Cudelia meeting Fumitan and the maid looking at the Joan of Arc painting. Fumitan tears up as she says the woman in the portrait looks like hope to her.
Yeah, I jumped the gun on that. Yeah, it's fine.
So what do we think? I know you said you had some wrap-up thoughts, Matt.
Yeah, and it's mostly about Saverin, because it's, I think, you know, listening back on the conversation we had about Akihiro's brother, Masahiro, if I remember correctly, you know, I felt that it didn't hit 100% of the way that I wanted it to. And the same thing happens with Saverin here. And I realized that, you know, really what I'm noticing is that I tend to be very keyed in on individual characters and their sort of what I would expect their internality to be. Like, what are they wrestling with? What are they dealing with? And they feel like both Masahiro and Saverin are being used more as plot tools to talk about systems, which I think is the thing that, you know, you and Chris in particular, Sybil, are more keyed in on and more thinking about, you know, sort of what do they represent in terms of their relationship to broader systems. Like Saverin here, to me, it's very bizarre that he shows almost no like warmth to Biscuit at all in this scene that they like first meet, like not even like a light spark of, oh my God, that's my brother. I haven't seen him in years. He's big. He seems like he's already super on guard. And I understand that he's nervous because there's this big thing about to blow up in his face that he's been working towards, but he didn't read to me like a brother who, you know, got to meet up his brother in an odd situation, just like Masahiro and Akihiro. This just felt like a plot point to just say, hey, guess what? These systems break up families because they end up taking a side in some, you know, they either end up with these pirates on this end or they end up trying to appease the powers that be on this other end. There are parallels here. And really the only family anybody really has is, in this case, is Tekadon, right? Because you have two families that are basically broken up. And then both sides being like, my true family is Tekadon. And it just doesn't end up making me feel much for Saverin as a character. He just seems kind of flat.
So we have more Saverin to come. His arc is not over.
Okay.
And I do also want to point out, when talking about systems, characters like Saverin and maybe other characters who might be in other organizations, let's say, are kind of there to put the lie to the one good apple in a barrel of rot. You can have all the best intentions and want to change things from the inside, but also, when you are one part of a machine that can go on without you, all you end up with are just stripped gears and slipping away.
Yeah, and I think when, like, the moment where you see Saverin sort of break down, realizing that he fucked up and that's not Cudelia, and he doesn't have the ace in the hole that he thinks he did, like, that moment is very effective, or at least, like, you know, it gets the point across. And yet I still feel like, on a whole, like, I just don't really care about him as a character or his relationship to Biscuit at all. Because it's just not set up at all.
The thing you're not supposed to care about is Biscuit had a one-way relationship with him. Saverin hasn't thought about that family ever since. He's thought more about the laborers and the people who were still in his life. To him, that's who needs saving. He doesn't give a shit about Biscuit or the Griffin family.
Yeah, I don't know. I get that, and he's been living with another family for what, at least 10 years, something like that.
Yeah,
you know, at least formative
eight.
So years.
Probably a decade.
Yeah, but it's like the pieces are there. I just don't feel like the emotional impact of it is hitting me the way I would like it to, or at least like I feel like a couple tweaks and a couple bits of dialogue could have made that work a little better, but it's still doing its job in terms of what's going on in the plot. And I like that there's a lot of interesting dealings and sort of complex stuff happening, but we still don't know what's happening with Mr. Masked Man, right? Like he's still
again, he hasn't even dropped a nom de plume yet.
Yeah, we don't know who that is. I mean, we know who that is, but we don't know who that is. just to remind everyone.
Who is that? They're completely new. Haven't seen anybody like them before.
Yeah. Have no idea.
Speaking of, we haven't seen the Gillis in a while, haven't we?
Yeah, definitely nobody who just took a honeymoon vacation from their duties.
Uh-huh. I didn't realize that they actually had the ceremony. Like
they didn't. I was making a
joke. Okay. Jesus.
They were talking about last time how, yeah, McGillis is on vacation officially right now, which is why Galio's acting solo.
Yeah. But like, yeah, how that ties into everything. And like, I assume that he's going to be end up part of the big bad. That, you know, he's going to be a guy who goes up against Tekadon at some point, right? Like, that's kind of the opposition setup. But, like, why? Where? Like, is he going to try to use Tekadon to further? We know none of that stuff right now because we're too much mired in the moment of, like, this big setup thing happening. And then we have Fumitan, who I also don't care about at all. Well, we spent a lot of time with her.
Let's just pull back. The only thing that McGillis has said he wants to do to anyone. Mm-hmm. Is telling Galio, I want to reform Gjallarhorn. And Galio goes, the things you are talking about sound very mutinous to me, buddy. And that's all we really have.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm waiting for the show more broadly to tip its hand. I'm very interested to see what McMurdo and Gordon have installed, or at least like what's the next step there. Because, I mean, in a way, this also seems like, I don't know if McMurdo was aware of this possibility at all, or if he's just trying to make lemonade, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. We are left on a lot of ambiguity here. And when we briefly discussed going into 3 episodes per recording, this is one that I was thinking, ooh, yeah, this would cut very differently if we started bunching them up, because we would have started with episode 16 that way.
Yeah, that would be very different. Also, not a lot of robots in these 2 episodes.
No,
we're going to get more robots next episode. You can tell.
Yes, we will have the return of glorious, violent, self-destructive mecha combat next time.
Yeah. Look, sometimes you have to cut your robots with, you know, like politics. It's the law of real robot shows.
I was afraid you were going to say baking soda and just make this the weirdest metaphor.
That would be a really weird metaphor.
But do you have any thoughts on this arc?
It's pretty good. I missed the robots, though. I mean, that's fair.
Yeah, they did just give us fan service of, oh, everybody prep the robots! The robots are coming! Oh!
They did. There's what? There's like 2 new Gundams. There's a new Tekadon unit that's not a Gundam that's also going to show up.
And then there's like, I mean, the thing is, we're going to get, what, 2 episodes of robot battles, and then we have, what, 4 or 5 episodes left to finish season 1?
We have 25, so we've got 7 after next week's.
Oh, yeah, because we're only doing 2 at a time. Yeah, so there's some time to, like, wrap up whatever's happening here and then go for whatever mid-series endgame.
It sure is an interesting arc in the current time of 2024.
Here is a thing that I will point out. If they had stopped Iron-Blooded Orphans at season 1, this probably could have led off like an open cliffhanger, but wouldn't be terrible. It's a full arc.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's a reason there is a time skip between the 2 halves.
I didn't know there was a time skip between the 2
there
halves.
There is a time skip between the 2 halves.
Interesting. I guess we'll see what happens. Because, honestly, we're still on just to pull things back, we're still on mission number one for Tekaton.
Yeah. Yeah, their job is get this girl to Earth, and what was supposed to be a quick detour has become possibly an entire solar system-wide rebellion.
Well, whoops. Shit happens, I guess.
Guess we'll see how much further than the Dort colonies this goes next time, given that there are bombings on three colonies now.
That's true. Three of, like, what? There's, like, five Dort colonies?
Six or seven. I forget if it's seven. I think it's seven based on the shape of the... Let me see if there's actually a hard amount for that while the two of you do plugs.
God. Goodelia and the seven Dorts.
God damn it!
Oh, fuck. Okay, plugs. Other shows on the network, Lightning Strikes Thrice. We're playing Breath of Fire Dragon Quarter. Go check that out. That game is very good. The other anime show we are watching, Terror in Residence, at least for the next few weeks. So that's for Patreon, for patrons, backers. Go to pitchrop.cash in order to find that page. And if you do that, you can also listen to Radio Manga, Sybil and I's, you know, show where we bullshit about manga, because we also read a lot of that. And then I also review Yuri series for Okazu. So you can check the link in the description for all of my reviews there.
Also, I will point out, there does not, like so many things about this series, there does not appear to be an official number of Dort colonies, but we know it at least goes up to six because that's where the hammerhead parked.
That's true.
Got it.
Oh, plugs. I bi-monthly talk about Karate Bugman at JourneyThroughTheDecacast.com.
Ooh, that's an upgrade.
Mm-hmm. Right? I think ooh, no. Tri-monthly?
Quarterly?
Tri-monthly.
No, we're not at quarterly yet. Tri-monthly we can hit, though.
Okay.
All right. Well, with that, we will be back in 2 weeks with episodes 17, 18, A Bunch of Gundams, Open Warfare, and just Chaos in the Solar System. Also, we'll see if Chris gets out of those catacombs from where he tried to assassinate the Pope. See ya!
Peace.
Bye.